possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Teamsters Local 206, helping Oregon's working families fight for good jobs and a better future. For information about how the Teamsters can help you win respect at work, the number is 503-251-2344. And also by AFSCME Local 88, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concern, Transition Projects, and American Friends Service Committee. More information at 503-239-9858 or www.local88.ws.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO FM, Portland 90.7. This is Ken Allen, one of your co-hosts.
And Marybeth Healy.
Tonight we are going to talk about the Medicare prescription drug program. And we have as a special guest Bill Vaughn, a senior policy analyst for Consumers Union. Are you with us, Bill? Bill? Uh-oh, maybe we missed out. So we'll start out a little bit about the background of this program, and Mary Beth, who's an expert on healthcare, will get us started on this.
Well, I don't know about expert, but I would think that the important thing for listeners to know, and you may know this, is that the deadline for our elders and to sign up for this program is next Monday, May 15th, and that's one of the really gross inequities and tragedies about this bill, in my belief, because folks are still having a lot of difficulty kind of weeding through the 74 different plans, Ken, that we have in Oregon for seniors to try to figure out what prescription drug benefit to sign up for. So maybe it would be, illuminating to start at the beginning. And this bill was passed in 2003, really in the dead of night. Members of Congress were voting on this. The votes were taken. It looked actually like it was going to fail. And members of Congress voted. They went home. The leaders of the Republican-controlled Congress kept the voting open for hours into the middle of the night. And I remember Steny Hoyer, who's a whip for the Democrats, saying, I went home. I live in Maryland. I went home and, thought the bill was going to die and woke up the next morning. It had passed. And we've all heard the stories of checks from the tobacco industry, or that precisely happened from the pharmaceutical industry. But one thing is clear. This bill was not written to help benefit American seniors, but it really was written to benefit the insurance and pharmaceutical companies in this country. The drug companies that we all know are one of the richest and most profitable on the Fortune 500 are slated to make an additional $138 billion in increased profits because of this bill.
And that's B with a billion.
That is billion with a B. That is exactly right.
So they kept that vote open so they could twist arms and get to a majority so that in 03, so they could make it look like the Republican majority was doing something about prescription drug costs.
That's exactly right. And I think that American seniors are smarter than the Republican Congress gave them credit for, because people are not signing up as folks were hoping. And now the deadline is fast approaching. And the problem with that is that if one does not sign up for a program by May 15th, they will incur a lifetime penalty of 1%. Now, that may not sound like very much, but it's 1% of the average premium nationwide. Excellent. You make the choice then at that point, either not to sign up for the plan or sign up for a very, very cheap plan that at least gives you some coverage, because this is not a benefit in the way that we traditionally think of Medicare. This is an insurance product that, you know, that is making millions for the pharmaceutical industry.
So when they set it up, they had the choice of creating a single-payer prescription plan that Medicare completely ran, or turn it over to the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And they've turned it over to the private sector to create competitive plans, right? That's why we have 74?
That's right.
Pharmaceuticals?
Well, I guess the biggest outrage that I think most people would agree is that, you know, now the United States of America is the largest purchaser of prescription things. And you can buy, you know, let's just say you live in Salem, you could buy Prilosec as an uninsured Oregonian in Salem for $120. What the VA would negotiate was $68. So you can see that negotiating brings down the herd. And probably all our lives, right, was, oh, we're going to get a Medicare drug benefit under or for America's seniors. Whether, you know, you're running for Congress or you were running for president, everybody said
well,
that.
In part by
and so you laid it out quite well that the Republicans really thought that, oh, we're going to be able to do this, use this as a campaign issue, and they did, because the program hadn't rolled out fully yet in the 2004 elections. And it was really the biggest sham on all of us. I mean, we as taxpayers are paying for this program, and the government is not being fiduciarily sound with taxpayer dollars.
Okay, Bill, you're with us now.
Disconnected myself. Apologize.
That's all right. Bill Vaughn, a senior policy analyst with Consumers Union. We've started talking about this Medicare plan, Bill, and just...
Yeah.
Hit on a couple of, initially a couple of the bad parts of the plan. Can you tell us a little bit about...
But before I forget, if I could come in on just one point, this May 15th deadline where you'll have for every month of national average premium higher penalty all the rest of your life in Medicare, you're pretty optimistic. You could have a heart attack. You could have a stroke next morning and face tens of thousands of dollars of prescription cost, and it's worth, despite the hassle, despite how we don't like that it got a good price and it's terrible for the taxpayers, if you're uninsured, you ought to spend time in this next week to do a little bit of research and join up. I was checking just here an hour ago in Portland County. I see about 46 options, which range from premium of $6.93 a month to $64.99 a month. And then I typed in four drugs. There were brand names, kind of expensive ones like Lipitor and Zocor and stuff like that. But those four drugs in Multnomah County ranged from a yearly cost of $2,054 to $3,756. So it makes a little bit of sense to try to do some shopping. And if you don't have much health cost or expense now, go with that cheap one or something, and at least you'll have insurance. And,
so you could change. It'll be kind of like an open enrollment with other insurance
exactly.
Plans. You can change.
Say you have something bad happens to you. You get cancer or some horrible thing, and hope that doesn't happen to anybody that's listening. But it happens. Each November, you can switch plans. And so if you're in a bare-bones plan, then you often get what you pay for. But if something happens that changes your health history and your life, each November you could then switch to a Cadillac plan that you might desperately need. So for the seniors who haven't signed up yet, and we think that's about 5 million, 4 million low-income who get enormous assistance in this program.
70s, she's relatively healthy, lives in Astoria, doesn't take...
Maybe it was your mom, Ken.
Maybe it was. Doesn't take any prescription drugs, but...
They tended to be the people who, because of income, didn't tend to have drug coverage, were cutting their pills in half, were not taking them. And they will pay... either no premium or a sliding scale premium that would be oh gosh, between zero and say the average premium's $30. It would be a sliding scale, say $15. They would have either zero deductible. Folks above 150%, they have generally the standard plan. They have about a 250 deductible, $250. Folks below the 150 who meet the asset, either a zero deductible or maybe a $50 one. If you're between, and this is why it gets complicated, if you're between 135% and 150% of the federal poverty level, you pay the $50. Below the 135, your copayments on a drug would be somewhere between $1 and $2 for a generic and $3 to $5 for a brand. And anybody that's bought prescription drugs lately knows what a deal that is. That's awesome.
That's excellent.
If you're in a nursing home, you have no copays. If you're in these income levels and in a nursing home, you have no copays. So you can see it's a pretty breathtakingly good example. The part that has given a lot of progressives some real heartburn is that in many, many states, Medicaid was slightly better.
Mm-hmm.
In many states, Medicaid had a zero copay or 50 cents. Max was $3. And the formulary, the list of drugs were covered, was pretty wide open in a whole lot of states. Oregon and Washington are a little tighter than other states, perhaps, but in most states, a pretty wide open formulary. And now, all of a sudden, these people are facing a $1 to $3 copay, and they have to pick and choose among plans, which can be very confusing. Yet, of the Medicare 43 million, 37 million are seniors, 6 million are people with disabilities. Of those 6 million, 2 million are disabled because of profound mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought that we're asking people to shop,
right,
pick and choose, is a little breathtaking on some of this because
and has been,
it's tough.
And it's been and very hard for people.
Very hard. So for your 6.5 million people on Medicaid who are lower income, have low assets, this has not been a gain and in some states is a setback. A small setback, but when you're living on the razor's edge, when you're counting every penny, it hurts. So that's a problem that Congress needs to fix. Above Medicaid, below 150, awesome, really awesome. And that's the group we still have had the most trouble reaching out to and getting enrolled and who we really need to work in the next week and in the future. The agency, Medicare agency, has done a nice thing in saying, gee, we won't cut off the low-income folks on May 15th. They can enroll later, and we're still arguing over whether they'll pay a small penalty or not.
So, folks, you're listening to Labor Radio on 90.7 FM, KBOO, Portland. If you've got a question for Bill about this Medicare drug program, our number is 503-231-8187. So, Bill, there is a provision in here that if somebody's on an employer-sponsored plan or a union-sponsored plan still, that they've received a letter probably from that plan and they can choose to join at a later time without a penalty?
Yeah, exactly. If you get a letter, let me qualify that. The letter basically has to say that the plan you're currently in, that your union got for you or your school teachers union got for you, is better. It's actuarially more valuable than the Medicare package. And they may use the term, you have creditable coverage. If you got that letter, you're home free. And there's no sense joining a plan that's less good, like Medicare. You'd stay with what you got. If sometime in the future, like what happened to Bethlehem Steel out here in the East, went under and cut all of its benefits for its retirees, if in the future something happens to your plan and it becomes less valuable, you're supposed to get a letter from them saying, oops, we went from being creditable coverage to not creditable We have become less valuable than the Medicare package. Then you have a window to join Medicare. You got to do it within 2 months, 63 days, 2 months. And you can join at that time with no penalty. So that's some good news. Hopefully, you know, pray that unions and folks never, employers don't cut back, and that this you never face this. But
always a fight.
I beg your pardon?
It's always a fight to maintain
it's
health benefits, particularly retiree benefits, right?
Yeah. And so there is that you know, get a letter from your former employer or from the union. Don't throw it away. Read it carefully, because it may be that news that, your current plan is deteriorating in value and you may want to join Medicare, but you got to do it quick.
And the other thing, I think, conversely, is that if you have gotten that letter saying that your coverage is as good or better than Medicare, save it, laminate it, put it in the safe deposit box.
Amen.
So let's talk about a couple of the downsides to this bill, the way it was crafted, Bill. In particular, the restriction on forming a big pool and the restriction on reimportation. Can you speak to those a little bit for us, please?
Yeah. This is why, you know, we're glad we finally got Medicare a drug benefit. It's hard to have a modern health care plan without covering prescription drugs. But our kids won't be able to afford this, and premiums will keep soaring, the donut will keep growing. In fact, this first year, the donut hole where you're all on your own, I'm not sure I heard you all speaking about that.
We
but
did
there's
not.
A point where you're all on your own. Well, that's $2,850 that you're all on your own. Next year, that inflates to $3,051. And you said, that kind of inflation is caused by the fact that we don't have real competition. We don't have the VA kind of negotiating. We don't have, I know the Canadian dollar is going through the ceiling here, but you still can't get Canadian prices, which I believe are still a lot better than U.S. prices because the Canadian government negotiates. European prices, you can't get. This law actually forbids Uncle Sam from negotiating like the VA does to cut prices roughly in half as compared to retail. It went around the barn to do it, but it basically prevents importation, and that, you know, keeps prices sky high. There's a couple other little gifts in there to the pharmaceutical industry. It prohibits Medicare from looking at the comparative value of different drugs and saying, gee, this new drug that you want to charge us of, but we only want to pay you $500. Medicare is prohibited from doing that on your basic chemotherapy, your dialysis drugs, the drugs that you need to have administered near a doctor because you're very sick and they're very powerful drugs. So there's all this giveaway to the industry that's just infuriating for young taxpayers.
It sounds like the tax and spend conservatives must have written this with the pharmaceutical lobbyists providing them with the pens and the paper.
The Part A trust fund runs out of money in 2018, and you know, don't stay up worrying about it. The country will make sure this program continues. But we are going to have to find ways to either achieve savings or new taxes. And the Part D benefit is an unfunded liability. There's no money coming in to pay for it, to the tune of about $8 trillion over 75 years. Well, I don't know. Sometimes I kind of laugh at, you know, 75 years. Who knows?
We'll all be living longer because of the pharmaceuticals.
That's right. I mean, you know, some things are impossible. But we know that Medicare has some huge problems ahead because there's going to be twice as many people on it in the next 20 years as today, as the baby boomers retire. And you'd think people would have plan for that and would say, we've got to get good prices. We've got to get the best price on pharmaceuticals in the world.
Well, and this could have been...
They said, no, let's get the worst price.
As a union negotiator, you know, my job is to negotiate the best packages, and this could have been a huge tool to negotiate with those pharmaceutical companies. You know, the biggest pool of insured folks... And you could have negotiated prices down not only for Medicare folks, but everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we have Anna from Milwaukee calling. Do you have a question for our guest, Anna? She must have got off. So
can I ask you a quick question?
Yep.
So you, Bill, you mentioned the issue around looking at comparative value, and you talked about the cancer drugs mostly. Is that true to the extent for the Lipitor Livastatin issue as well? For any drugs, they're not allowed to look at the efficacy of these?
I was doing shorthand. The section that says you can't look at the efficacy applies to drugs that are still covered under Part B.
Okay.
And this new drug benefit is all something called Part D for drugs. Doctor and, mm-hmm. and rehab and kind of services reimburses about $10 billion a year for very, very serious drugs, chemo, antiemetics to keep you from being too nauseated during chemo, EPO, which is a drug used for kidney patients to keep them from getting anemic. These are such powerful drugs and are part of a condition that's so serious, they are administered near or by a doctor.
Oh, gotcha.
So in Part B is where that prohibition occurs. But
Anna, are you with us? Anna? We must be having some technical difficulty here. Maybe it's the pharmaceutical industry, you know, waving some wand. Hey, the other thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, here we are. The sign-up deadline is May 15th. Folks in Oregon have been working diligently, and kudos to all the Sheba people and other advocates who have been really trying to work through the confusion aspect of this for America's seniors. But what can folks do, Bill? I mean, we... Really, you know, in Oregon, actually, we actually have a purchasing pool here that allows the public sector to join, and some uninsured Oregonians who are 54 years and older, and we actually did negotiate a little something with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid to allow that Oregon prescription drug program to be used in conjunction with whatever Part D program a senior signed up for. But here we are, it's 2006, this clearly is not going to has not rolled out the way that most people would have envisioned it. What can folks do to maybe try to change it? I know there was a move afoot to try to change the deadline. Has that happened? Do we think that it might in the next week? What other things can people do?
It has not happened, and HHS Secretary Leavitt has very strongly said no. We want people to join up, and you've got to set a deadline, and we're not going to do it. And for Congress to do it in this week, I just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
People are trying, but it is such a long shot, and Leavitt kind of speaks for the president. So would he sign such a bill? He hasn't vetoed much in his terms, but this is a long shot. You know, to me, as you folks talk to their members of Congress or write them or something, this is a very, very hard population to reach. And again, you have to think that really 20%, 25% of the Medicare population has some cognitive difficulty. Early Alzheimer's, have had a series of perhaps heart attacks or strokes. And trying to reach out and educate people about something as complicated as this is so tough. Why do we make it so tough? Why don't we just say, hey, IRS, would you please look at the income that mm-hmm. people are getting from Social Security and from their dividends and interest and pensions and stuff, and anybody who's below this 150% number, presumptively enroll them. Just say, you're probably eligible.
Right.
But maybe you're not. Maybe you're sitting on a room full of Van Gogh paintings that you could sell, you know, and pay for yourself. But most people on low incomes aren't sitting in palaces with Mercedes-Benz out front. And so instead, just take a deep breath and say, let's automatically enroll these people, and then we'll send them a letter and say, hello, please, as an honorable citizen, if you think you got lots of assets that somehow we haven't detected and that you don't think you're eligible for this, please send back the postcard and we'll disenroll you. But, you know, we make it so hard to get into these programs, and why not just say, oh, cut out all this administrative hassle and just do it.
Right. Right. Again, I think that there are many ways. And I just had such a great time with these women and men in Astoria. And, you know, you could, when the presentation was being done, they're looking. And the question was, you know, how did we get here? Right. And so then I kind of go through, you know, how we got here. And the light bulb went off in people's heads going, oh. So, you know, and so America's seniors are not stupid. And they ask those questions. Why couldn't it have been simpler? We could have all just gotten a card. Kind of similarly to how they worked the Medicare Part B. Part B,
yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And just, you wouldn't have to pick and choose. And what's going to be scary, I'm sorry, I don't want to scare people, but I hope people get upset enough that they will write and urge their members of Congress to simplify and change this. But this fall, in this first open enrollment period, there's got to be a lot of change. Because you've got 40 to 60 different options and plans. But like a lot of things in life, people are going with the names they've heard of. And I was looking again at Multnomah. Am I saying that
Multnomah.
Right?
Multnomah.
Multnomah County. And they, as of the end of April, you had 25,800 people in that county signed up. This is Portland County. And five plans had 90% of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next four plans took up the next 9%. Well, hello, where are the other 20? They're sitting there with five people here and 20 people here. There's no way that survives.
So they're going to drop out.
They're going to drop out, or they're going to drastically raise their premiums to make up for. I mean, how do you advertise with when you've enrolled a couple hundred people? How do you write a contract with a local drugstore when you've enrolled 80 people? You don't. And so you're going to either drop out, you're going to raise your premiums, you're going to cut back on your formulary, and the people, and admittedly that's a small number of people, in these smaller plans that haven't taken off, are going to be in just turmoil, and they're going to have to go through picking and choosing again, and we're likely to go through that kind of shakeout for the next couple of autumns, and it didn't need to be that way.
So, Bill, we actually have Anna's question. We are having some technical difficulty here, but she asks, what can somebody that earns just over the poverty line get in the way of Medicare? I guess I would ask her, she's 65, but perhaps you can help a little bit.
Yeah, if she's you know, eligible for Medicare and just over the 150%, do check it out. Check it out with what might be called your state health insurance assistance program. I think.
And I actually have the SHIBA number here, right, which it will give out.
Because the 150% in different some states will disregard a little bit of money on the side that, you know, if you earn, if $35 of that might be earned income, it might be disregarded. The number is not a hard number. So if you're near that number, for gosh sakes, check it out, because it can be a great break for you. But if you're, you know, a single person at $20,000, there's no way you get close enough. And that's the problem. Because there's this hard cliff, you're either eligible or you're not. If you, say, had an interest-bearing checking account and interest rates go up, and one year you discover, oops, my income went up by $1, you could go, I calculated this out, you could go from paying about $800 for $5,000 worth of drugs to paying about, I haven't done it lately, about $3,800. That $1 income difference
just blows you out of the water.
Blow you away. It's the ultimate cliff in a social program. You get a buck more, and all of a sudden you're facing like $3,000 extra cost. Congress has to fix that. That's just crazy.
Absolutely. And we have another question as well. And the woman, I'm thinking it's Yannette, and is asking, is this for only for people on Medicare, and what is the age limit?
Well, Medicare and people who are what's called dual eligible, so we've used that term, that you're dually eligible for Medicaid and Medicare, but you have to be eligible for Medicare, and as I said, that's about 43 million people, and it starts for 37 million of them are what's called seniors. They're 65 or older, but 6 million of them are the disabled category, in which they are also getting eventually getting a Social Security disability income. And once you get Social Security disability income, about 2 years later, you're eligible for Medicare. And that's where 6 million of these folks come from.
Wow. Well, I'd also like to add to her question is that the Oregon Prescription Drug Program is for 54 years and older, and it is a discount card. It's not insurance in the traditional sense, but folks who have signed up, the program's been in operation now for a little over a year, but most people are saving up to 60% on their pharmaceuticals. It's been tremendous for people who either are in the donut hole already or who are not on Medicare. But you must be 54 years or older and at or below 185% of federal poverty, which is now $18,130 a year. So, Yannette, I hope that helps to answer your question. And you can reach the Oregon Prescription Drug Program at www.opdp.org or 503-378-2422, and they'll be happy to help you out. It's a very simple process, and it is free for people to join.
So, Bill, have you got a few more minutes?
Sure.
Great. You're listening to KBOO FM Portland, 90.7 FM, and we're talking about the Medicare Plan B. We wanted to ask you, Bill, since we have you on, if you're familiar with the NZ bill that's percolating.
Oh, big test votes coming up tomorrow.
Exactly, and we think it's an important bill to let folks know about.
It would be worth doing. It basically impacts about 85 million of us in the individual insurance market, if you've employer or small group market. But the way the bill is worded, it also affects mid-sized businesses, Boeing and really big players like that wouldn't be affected, or big ERISA plans, but everybody else would be affected. And the way it works is it basically says anything that the state government has done in the way of can be overridden. That a state that has said, gee, you can't raise premiums more than X percent a year, or that the difference in premiums between different insurance policies can only be 20%. Those are overridden. And a whole lot of the laws that if you file a claim and your insurance company says, forget about it, that lets you appeal, that lets you contest it, could be overridden. And the people, why in the world would Congress be doing this? There's a group of organizations, perhaps led by the National Federation of Independent Businesses and the Realtors, National Association of Realtors are involved, who are saying, gee, insurance costs so much, we can't afford it, and it's all these state rules and regulations that make it so expensive. And if we could just overturn those or be able to ignore them, we could get a lot cheaper insurance and more people would get insurance. Well, they got a point, but the point they forget is that insurers make money by not covering sick people.
Exactly.
And this law will let insurers lower rates for people are healthy, athletic trainers at your local gym will be able to get a great insurance policy because they're presumably pretty healthy. But an industry or a group of small businessmen who have older workers or have hired somebody with a sick child are going to see their costs go right through the ceiling. And it sort of undoes the whole concept of insurance, which is spreading the risk. What this says is, gee, a bunch of people think they're healthy and can get a better rate.
It had been passed over the years, including mental health parity, which we just got done in the last legislative session.
After a 10-year struggle.
Right. Those would all be wiped out by this legislation in one fell swoop.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well,
so both Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith are critical to be communicated with at this time. And so for Senator Wyden, it's I'll give the local number. It's 503-326-7525. And for Senator Smith, also 503-326-3386. And I would also just encourage people to go to my organization's website, www.oregoniansforhealthsecurity.org, and we have a little Get Active section. You can send a letter to them or a fax and or an email. And we had a bucket load of people write in over the last week, so hopefully we'll be able to stave this bad bill off.
So we're going to try one more time. I believe we have a caller with a question. Are you still there? No, I guess not.
I hear something, but...
Major technical difficulties tonight. So, Bill, anything else about this ENSI bill before we...
Just thanks for raising it. It really is revolutionary. I mean, we've spent so many years, as you say, trying to get mental health parity, and you know, the states pass these mandates largely because insurers don't like to cover sick people, and you don't make money covering sick people, and so they've tried not to do these things, and the states have all across the country have said, why ask people to buy health insurance when it doesn't cover them when they get sick or when they're pregnant or when they're having a baby, and all of this work of 20, 30, 40 years even is about to go down the tubes if this bill passes, and it is a very close call in the Senate. What the fight is, not to be able to defeat it with 51 votes. We don't have 51 votes. The fight is, are there 41 senators who will say, excuse me, Senate Majority Leader, but we're going to filibuster. We're not going to let this proceed. This just isn't going to happen.
Around health care issues and for seniors and... You know, I think he should be encouraged to vote against cloture and to do a filibuster. And people should contact Senator Gordon Smith. He went through a family issue on mental health coverage for his son, and I think could be very sympathetic to vote in the right way on this. And people shouldn't give up on that vote.
No, and he's actually in the past, and Bill, you may remember this, he's been really helpful with in the realtors and others are doing this is because of the high cost of health care and that they can't any longer provide health insurance benefits for their employees. I think we would all agree to that. But one other thing that with enough, you know, sick people and enough healthy people to make the market work in this, but it also shows of why we just need more accountability and more people to be outraged at this, because we do have a voice in this, and Senator Smith can be swayed to vote the right way on this, I think, because of his past votes with association health plans, which had some similar components to it.
I think you're absolutely right. You're very lucky in Oregon to have two very thoughtful senators, and they're both major players in the health world, so it's definitely worth trying. And the problem with the ENSI bill, the realtors and the small businessmen have a point. Health insurance costs too much. Why don't we get international prices on drugs?
That's right.
we were just talking on Medicare paying too much because it can't negotiate, but it impacts all of us.
That's exactly right.
Boy, that'd do a lot more than this bill would do to help small businesses.
Exactly. This is kind of a stealth bill. Has it already been through the House?
the House passed something that we all thought was kind of bad until we saw this, called association health plans. So the House has passed something, and frankly has passed that same bill for each of the last five Congresses, I think, over the last 10 years. They keep passing this thing, and the Senate keeps looking at it and saying, ooh, don't like that. So Senator Enzi tried to put some new bells and whistles on it to see if he could get a majority to move it forward. And as more and more of us look at it, we see more trouble with this than the House version. But if the Senate passes it, then you go to conference with two terrible things, and you could well get the worst from both.
Right. I'd like to give the phone numbers again, if I could, for people to call Senator Wyden. It's 503-326-7525, and Senator Smith, also 503.
For a rally on Capitol Hill at this 10 tomorrow morning, I'm guessing around 2-ish or so.
Okay.
But yeah, even leaving a voicemail would be helpful. This truly is a stealth bill and a crisis.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many people outside the Beltway really know about it. I know my union, AFSCME, has been pushing for press conferences all around the country in the last couple of weeks, and we had a press conference here in Portland, and it was poorly attended. The local media had no interest in it because it was a little bit too much policy wonkish issue.
It's the calculus of healthcare, but it's so important.
Absolutely.
It really is. And, you know, I think many advocates in the mental health community and others have been trying to work this, you know, trying to engage people in this, because it was a 10-year fight. It was really the only shining light on healthcare reform at all in our 2005 legislative session, and it would just be a crying shame to lose that without any voice in the process, right? That's the other aspect of this that's just so outrageous, and the hypocrisy of this being healthcare week, and they've tried to, you know, limit people's rights in the by capping damages for negligence by physicians, to eliminating coverage for people, to of course the final week of signing up for Medicare. So it isn't indeed it's healthcare week, but not all about the good things of healthcare.
Amen. Well said.
Thank you.
So we want to thank you, Bill, for joining us. You know, you've given us a lot of great information on both the Medicare drug program and the NZ plan, and we'll probably call you the next time we need an expert on these subjects.
Well, be honored. And
thank you for being
on.
You
all have a good evening.
Great. Thank you.
So,
Mary Beth, you know, we had a program probably about 2 months ago. We talked healthcare. And I think it might be a good idea just to kind of remind folks of what's out there, what's percolating about healthcare.
I'd be really happy to do that. Can I give the SHIBA number, though, to wrap up the Medicare thing for just 1 second? So if folks are still looking for assistance, the Senior Health Insurance Benefits Assistance Program, these are volunteers who have been helping Oregonians to sign up for plans, and you can reach them at 1-800-722-4134. Again, that's 800-722-4134. And they'll probably, if you have to leave a message, that's okay. They're really good about calling back. So healthcare. We have now five of the set to age 19. They are out there collecting signatures. They need 76,000, let's call it 77,000 valid signatures by July 7th. Actually, all of these measures need the valid signatures by July 7th to get on our November ballot.
And that measure has some legs. I'm told they got some pretty sizable contributions in the healthcare industry and from some unions. So
many times in the last number of years. Then we have two measures that are designed for universal access. One is Measure 111, which sets a date certain by November of 2008 for the Oregon legislature to come up with a plan for universal health care covering seven measures of sustainability. Then we have Measure 40, which is actually the only one of these healthcare measures that is a constitutional amendment. A few more signatures, and this would declare healthcare as a fundamental human right in our Constitution. 85% of federal poverty, plus the private sector, can join in this pool and negotiate, actually, surprise, lower prices with the pharmaceutical industry. The initiative would expand that out to all Oregonians without prescription drug coverage, regardless of age or income. So that is a real benefit for people who may not have health insurance, as, you know, 613,000 of us don't, and be able to at least get low-cost medications.
So I would bet that everybody in Oregon will support that except for the pharmaceutical companies.
I think so, and and I think, again, I really believe that 2006 is the year that we as Oregonians have an opportunity to really change the dialogue in Salem around health care, and both in passing ballot measures, but also electing a pro-affordable health care legislature, so that we're not sitting here, Ken, a year from now having the same conversation, but we're talking about all the solutions that are on the table.
So let's also just briefly announce, you know, the task force that we're both on. And I mean, I really want the listeners to have some hope and some optimism that healthcare is the issue, that healthcare is the political issue that we're able to move on and get something done. And we're both on a Senate task force appointed by Senate President Courtney, and the principles of the task force are to establish a universal, accessible healthcare. And it seems to me a pretty serious task force with some real players on that.
It's really exciting to deal with this issue, except for mental health parity, in the way that they should have, and have come together and created this commission that is really, what did Senator Bates say on Friday, Ken, that we were 2 months ahead of schedule, because we don't have to go through, there's so much more agreement. That's the other real hopefulness that I can impart to listeners, is that there is much more agreement on the problem, that we need a universal system. Defining that will be a strategy, and paying for, or a challenge, and paying for it will be the challenge. But we think that there's all the people at the table that need to be there, and I think we've had thoughtful and respectful conversations in that group.
Yeah, I want the listeners to know that this task force has got hospitals on it, insurance companies, doctors, dentists, the nursing profession, the healthcare workers, business and labor, and people are very serious about coming up with a plan for Oregon. You know, we may turn upside down what is happening nationally, where they're trying to undo a lot of good things. We need to put Oregon back in the forefront of healthcare policy and legislation. You know, we're looking at what's been done recently in Massachusetts, but I, for one, have a great deal of hope about what we're doing in healthcare.
Absolutely, and maybe in these last few minutes I should give out the Medicare numbers again for folks. Call your senators on the NZ bill, but if you need help with prescription drugs, call Sheba at 800-722-4134 or visit the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, www.opdp.org.
You've been listening to Labor Radio. I'm Ken Allen, one of your co-hosts.
And I'm Mary Beth Healy.
We want to thank you for listening, and stay tuned for other KBOO programs, and catch us on Labor Radio next Monday night at 6 p.m. Thank you.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503 OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day. And also by AFSCME Local 3336, representing the employees of Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality by advocating for working conditions, pay and benefits, supporting political activity that promotes pro-environment and pro-labor positions, strengthening labor coalitions, and actively organizing members. More information at AFSCME3336.org.